Hi, and welcome to Terra Nullius Cyprus. I'm Costa Constanti. I want to thank my sponsors, CVAR, Center for Visual Arts and Research in the Old Town of Nicosia, where they have a wonderful museum and library and a gallery that depicts Cyprus. Also want to thank Limoncello Deli Bar in Nicosia at Ayos Antonios Market. I obviously want to thank Island Talks at Host Cell Podcast, doing wonderful work with all the podcast channels. Check them out. And today I have a special guest all the way from France, on the other side of Europe. Welcome to the podcast, Anaïs.
Thank you so much. I'm so happy to be here.
And I've just gone blank. You told me how to pronounce your surname. And of course, being the typical man that I am, I've already forgotten how to pronounce it.
So my first name is Anaïs, mm-hmm. and Yubi. Yubi. It doesn't spell like this, but it's Catalan origin. And we are very proud of our double L.
Ah, Catalan origin. Okay, well, that's interesting because I know, well, I've done a lot of work on the Catalonia and Basque regions. Well, let's come back to that in a minute. But you're in Cyprus at the moment because you're involved in this wonderful exhibition that's going to be presented in the buffer zone, in the dead zone of Nicosia. You're bringing the dead zone to life. You've only been here a day or two now?
I think it's been 4 days now. 4 days. I arrived on Tuesday.
Right. You've been in the island for 4 days and tonight. So at the time of recording, it's the launch day of the exhibition. So tonight, people that are invited are going to get to come and see this exhibition. Tell me a little bit of the exhibition. Let's go right back to how this began. Tell me what it's about. What are people going to see? Because when people are listening to this, they're still going to be able to check it out because it's going to be going to the 31st of October.
Exactly.
In the Nicosia Buffer Zone next to Lidra Street Crossing Point or Loch Maji for those coming from the north. Tell me a little bit more about this, Anaïs.
So I'm the co-founder of a collective called Collectif Habitante with mm-hmm. Julie Gautron, which is a French artist living in the island. And we associated with D6EU, a great association that believes that art can help transition, mm-hmm. with Argiro Tomasu. Mm-hmm. And we had, with Collectif Habitante, this objective of bringing together artists of different nationalities. And here in Cyprus artists from the other both sides of the island. Mm-hmm. And when we associated with D6EU, Argiro was thinking, wait, if we're building a bridge, what about having an exhibition in the buffer zone? Mm-hmm. And at first we were thinking, yes, I mean, Home for Cooperation exists, but she was being even more bold. She said, no, the buffer zone that we just go through and we don't even look at it anymore, that doesn't belong anymore to the people. Mm-hmm. The buffer zone of Lidra Street, Loch Maji crossing.
Interesting.
And there is a building just after the crossing from the Greek Cypriot side. When on your right, you have a building that has kind of a yellowish facade.
Mm-hmm. It's a sandstone building.
Yes,
yeah.
It used to be the master plan office. And mm-hmm. I know that it has been occupied by young people a few years ago. Mm-hmm. And we wanted to make this building belong to the people again. And when I say to the people, anyone.
Yeah.
Anyone except, unfortunately, refugees, because they're not allowed to cross the buffer zone. Yeah. So we're excluding a huge part mm-hmm. of the people of Cyprus. And this is, for us, a tragedy. But we were trying to attract people that are from both sides and mm-hmm. also tourists that just go through and just see it as a folklore place. Mm-hmm. It's a buffer zone. How about a folklore thing? I heard yesterday mm-hmm. a French tourist guide, when she just had crossed the Greek Cypriot side, she said to her group, 15 people, French people, and she said, welcome to Turkey.
Oh,
and she was still in the buffer zone. And it's not Turkey on the other side either. I mean, like, it's depends. Yeah. You have
Well, it's a Turkish Cypriot community.
Yes,
it's Greek
but
Cypriot community.
It was so offensive that we were with other artists and we stopped and we say, no.
You know, it's funny you say that because just last week I had the same experience. I had some guests from America and one of them said, are we in Turkey now? Mm-hmm. I said, no. Have you crossed the Cilician Sea of the Mediterranean? You're not on Turkey. You're not in Turkey. I mean, there's Turkish Cypriots around, and sure, there's some Turkish people as well, but you're not in Turkey. But I want to come back to the excluding certain people. You say that refugees, for example, coming from Syria or Afghanistan or Cameroon or whatever, they can't access this. And that's understandable. It would be obviously lovely if everybody could access this. But you've touched on a very good point here, because the issue in Cyprus is I don't think there is anywhere that 100% of the bodies on the island can attend. If you're in the north, there are many Greek Cypriots that can't cross or won't cross. If it's in the south, there are some people from Turkey and people that aren't Cypriot born that can't cross. If it's in the buffer zone, well, then, you know, migrants and refugees, you know, people that are waiting for verdicts of asylum case and whatever, can't cross. Now, you're right. The Home for Corporation has done a good job of allowing a safe space for both Greek and Turkish Cypriots to meet without crossing.
Either. But still excluding refugees.
Correct. Unless they're the refugees that are trapped in the buffer zone, then they access it. But again, it's this catch-22. I do understand, though, that your ultimate goal is for the two main indigenous Cypriot communities, Greek and Turkish Cypriots, to explore each other and use this bridge of the Ledra Street buffer zone. So I think that's fair enough. That is your focus, and so, that's okay.
Yes, indeed. Mm-hmm. The exhibition was focusing in bringing together mm-hmm. artists from different nationalities. Mm-hmm. We're also having international artists, and mm-hmm. our curator is Italian.
All right.
So it's not only an exhibition with Cypriot artists, it's an exhibition with international artists.
Excellent.
And it happens that in this exhibition that is about home, mm-hmm. imagining home between the walls, that's the mm-hmm. title of the exhibition, we're bringing together five artists. Mm-hmm. I'm not considering myself as an artist, I'm more of a writer, but I'm part of these five people. Mm-hmm. And this artist, there is a Greek Cypriot, Efis Avides.
Yep.
There is two Turkish Cypriots, among them Nafia Akdeniz, mm-hmm. which is a poetress.
She's a great poetress.
Yes, yeah. And we have Summer, which is last.
I'll put it into the body of the podcast when I post it. There'll be a link.
What is last name?
That's okay.
So I'm mm-hmm. just going to. So we have five artists. Mm-hmm. I'm not considering myself an artist, I'm a writer, but I'm part of these five artists. And we have Greek Cypriot, Turkish Cypriot artist, a French artist, and an Italian curator. Mm-hmm. So it's an international exhibition about nice. Home, imagining home between the walls, mm-hmm. because we are in the buffer zone. And sometimes it feels like the buffer zone is not a fringe, but it's like walls.
Yeah.
Like a huge wall, like the in French we say it was the Great Wall of China. Mm-hmm. Sometimes it feels like the Great Wall of China is here in the middle of Cyprus. And we wanted to challenge this idea, you said it at the beginning, that the buffer zone is a dead zone. Mm-hmm. The buffer zone is full of memories that belongs 50 years ago. Mm-hmm. Can we try to build new memories that are not negative memories? Can we build memories of indeed having coffee at a Home for Cooperation, but also having art exhibition in this space that was just waiting for it? It's so perfect for an art exhibition. You can't imagine. Huge ceiling,
yes.
Beautiful windows. The floor is very from 70s.
And I think that the walls are relatively freshly painted from the master plan period.
Exactly. Right?
Yes, yeah, yeah. Yes. No, it's a great space.
It looks like it was just waiting to be revived and to belong again to people.
So just to remind those listening, this space is literally as you cross north from the Greek Cypriot checkpoint of Ledra Street, or if you cross south from the Turkish Cypriot checkpoint of Lokmaji, it's literally 5 to 10 meters away from the checkpoint. You cannot miss it. You do not need to cross to the other side in theory to go to it. So, I mean, that would be a bonus if you do, but you can just go into the buffer zone to this exhibition space. What hours would it be open? We can come back to that. Just have a think. But look, also you said it runs to the 31st of October. It begins on the 4th of October. And by the time people are listening to this, it'll be 1 or 2 weeks in. So they'll have about 2 weeks to get out there and check it out. Chances are that many people that do attend will have been to the buffer zone in the past. Most Cypriots by now have either crossed or gone to the buffer zone for some event. I mean, you might be familiar with the Home for Corporation area. There's a reception center there, and the name just evades me right now. Shatustatus. So many people have been to weddings and christenings there because it's like it's the buffer zone, but it's technically Greek Cypriot controlled. Parcel of land there, but you still got to go past the checkpoint to get to it. So people have come a little bit familiar with it. However, people's interaction with the buffer zone is minimal. It's really just a crossing point for most.
Especially there.
Especially in Ledra
Street. Yeah. It's very minimum. You just go through.
Yeah, and it's in 2014 maybe, I was involved with a group of dancers where we tangoed across the Ledra Street buffer zone. And I remember people actually crying that were crossing at the time because they said, we've crossed a few times. We have these memories of this buffer zone. It's all quite negative at the moment, but now you've just given us this memory of, you know, tangoing, dancing down the buffer zone. You're now contributing with an exhibition where people are going to be able to come and see artworks and poetry and whatnot so they can create new memories. I think this idea of new memories is really important in Cyprus because we've spent the last 50 to 60 years, depending on which community you're from, talking about the past. and more often than not is talked about in a very negative way. So with these things that happen bi-communally across the divide, in the buffer zone, in either community, that bring them to that do create new memories. My family are refugees from the north. Obviously, I've heard my whole life their stories. But when I go now and meet with Turkish Cypriot friends, I'm creating new memories in these villages, and they're positive ones now. So I'm now starting to associate it more positively. And I think these bridges are really important with moving forward, not just in Cyprus, but this is also important to other parts of the world. Now, Cyprus could be I won't say best practice example for other countries, but it can be used to help others. I mean, we see what's happening now in the Middle East. The day is going to come where we're going to have to start rebuilding bridges there. So
A quick thing, I don't know if it would be interesting, but one thing that I always loved in Cyprus is that, yes, the island is divided, and it's so divided, but all these subterranean rivers that you can't see, and especially when you're a foreigner, you step into a new division without, and I'm not talking about the bar in Nicosia here, but you step into new divisions without knowing it, and you just learn because someone explained it to you after. Mm-hmm. So you do a lot of mistakes at the beginning. But one thing that I always loved in Cyprus is that we're indeed is this little island in the middle of the Middle East tensions. Mm-hmm. But when you go further, you realize that you have Lebanese working with Israeli, yes, in the same company. Even so, it's really forbidden for Lebanese to have any contact with Israeli. You have Russian working together with Ukrainians. Even so, for Ukrainians, it's like epidermic allergy to anything being Russian. Mm-hmm. It's like if the island is itself divided, but is able to unite people from other country at war.
It's ironic, isn't it?
Yes. I don't know if it's ironic or extremely beautiful.
I'd like to say it's extremely beautiful, but I also think it is ironic because, for example, you know that Israelis and Lebanese come to Cyprus to marry because different religious sects in Lebanon can't marry, so they will come to Cyprus to marry.
In Israel also, it's very hard to marry if you're different from different religions.
Correct, yeah. So they come to Cyprus and have town hall weddings or whatever, which are allowed in most places over there. So Cyprus has been a point of unifying of different religions, cultures, and personalities. I always find it interesting. Lately, I've been going to, Lebanon, to Larnaca. I've been going to Larnaca lately, and I've been listening to the conversations on the tables around me. And on one table, I'll hear Hebrew, and on the other table, I'll hear Arabic. And I know full well that these are two families that have fled conflict. You can tell that they're relatively new to the island, and they're sitting on tables meters apart from each other. And I don't want to say there's no problem. I'm sure they're probably not so thrilled to be near each other, but there is a respect for space. So they're not bringing that conflict with them here. The only other time I've really seen that successfully done has been in Australia, where I grew up, where you would see, for example, Turks and Greeks mingling, even intermarrying. You would see all the different ex-Yugoslav states and ex-Soviet states, intermingling and working together, and quite successfully. It's this understanding of we leave this conflict behind, all these tensions behind, and we come to the new land, Meanwhile, however, unlike Cyprus, Australia is not divided. Cyprus is divided. So it's interesting when we see these different groups interacting. They appreciate Cyprus for this space to do so, but I think Cypriots should also appreciate them for showing the way of how to work together. Now, I know you mentioned, that you've known Cyprus so well. You were here for a good 5 years. You were living here for 5 years at some stage. You're working as a journalist, if I'm not mistaken.
Yeah, I wouldn't say I know Cyprus so well. I think it takes a lifetime to know Cyprus just a bit. So I leave that to Cypriots to know their island very well.
It does help to look at it with external eyes, though. It does help.
The thing is that I have a very strong link with the island. Two of my kids were born here. Oh. So two of my kids were born here. Yep. So the island came into my family. It will always be a family island in some ways. I also wrote a book on Cyprus.
Mm-hmm. And the name of the book?
Au Café de la Ville Perdue in French, which means at the coffee of the lost city. The lost city being Varoshaza.
Is it only in French?
Unfortunately, but I'm sending a message to any publisher in Greek language or Turkish language or even English language.
Greek, Turkish or English, that would be great to have that book translated. But there's a lot of French speakers on the island, so say the name of the book again.
Au Café de la Ville Perdue. You can either order it online or have it at the bookshop, French language called La Boîte à Lire.
What is the theme of the book?
So there is many themes in the book, but I would say that the idea of writing the book came to me when I discovered Varosha for the first time in 2018. I was very shocked that no one was talking about Varosha. At that time, no one was talking because Varosha was still closed. And I couldn't understand how humanity could accept that one of their city turned off, because I don't think that Varosha is dead, but that one city was inhabited and it was just, oh, okay, we had the city, but now it's there. And then by talking to people, I realized that no, Varosha was very much alive. All the people that used to live in Varosha were keeping the memories, like you keep the memory of someone that has disappeared, that, you know, it's there. You cannot access the grave, but you you feel like if you go back, it would be like nothing's changed. And I conducted many interviews with former inhabitants of Varosha, but also people who are now living next to Varosha. So either Turkish or Cypriot Turkish people who were telling me how hard it is also to live next to a city that doesn't live anymore. That is it does live differently, but for them, it's also have as having a gray zone that is like gangrenous, and they're afraid that it will attack their own city and their own houses. So I was very inspired by this. I was thinking, okay, for the very first time, we can see that a city is like a human.
Yes.
And it can continue living through the building, getting, you know, insect, birds, trees. But as us as a human, we have to go with the fact that we lost this city. And that's why it's a lost city in my title, and not a dead city. But Nafia Akdeniz is actually working on this also in the exhibition. And she does a great job. Like, you should really come to the exhibition.
I've seen
also
some of her other works. It's amazing. I'm a big fan of her. And I do want to say a shout out to her for the amazing work she does in Cyprus. She's a wonderful person. Teşekkürler Nafia for the work you do. With the city of Varosha, with the with the suburb of Varosha, which is part of the bigger city of Famagusta, you're right. It's wrong when we call it a dead city. It's not an archaeological site, which even those we never call dead. It's still there. It's inhabited by living creatures, not humans, unfortunately, for now. The memories of it are very much alive from first-hand accounts of people that lived there are still alive. Thus, the city is still alive with them, where they carry the stories of Varosha elsewhere. But it's also kind of like a human that's in a coma. It can come back. There's hope. We haven't turned off the life support yet. So I do think that the day will come when, you know, the little screen that's going beep, beep, you know, we'll eventually just start pounding really hard.
We're already hearing the beep. The problem is that we're not hearing it with legal way.
Correct,
It's not, it was not decided with doctors, let's say.
Correct.
And the city will need a lot of re-education. I just wanted to add that my book is not only an architecture book. I'm not an architect, so for sure. I'm not an urbanist, and I'm not a diplomat. I'm not an historian. I'm not a lot of things. I'm just a writer as a journalist, but also a writer of fiction. And it's a love story. It's also the story of a woman that goes through various huge moments of Cyprus history. And her life also is impacted by this history because our generation may be less, and I'm not Cypriot, so I shouldn't say our generation, but the generation of your parents, the generation of your parents are, how to say, their life was impacted or even decided by the way Cyprus history moved. I don't think the life of your parents would have been the same if 74 didn't exist.
Correct.
And before that, if other big days.
There would be many things that would be different if it wasn't for the conflict in general, from, you know, Turkish Cypriots fleeing their homes in the 60s to Greek Cypriots in the 70s. I do often try to look at the positive side. Like, I think my family had the opportunity to migrate as refugees to the other side of the planet, to a wonderful place like Australia. And I'm a product of that. Now, as a product of Australia, child of refugees, I've actually repatriated to Cyprus, and I now contribute to Cyprus. And I think, I hope I'm doing a good job. And I think I'm at least on the positive side of things, doing things. But if it wasn't for the war, who knows what I would be today? Maybe I'll just be an accountant. No offense to the accountants listening. But maybe I won't be doing the exciting things that I'm involved in my life. And I kind of am thankful for the course of my family's history. Of course, it's not the same for everyone. And I wouldn't dare compare our experience to the refugees' experience of people coming from Syria and Afghanistan into Australia, into Cyprus today. This is a much darker, much more violent, much more complicated history with them. Tell me, working in Cyprus for 5 years, how did you feel? Now, you're French. You're from southern France. Whereabouts are you?
Not at all. I'm French, but I'm not from France. I was raised abroad all my life.
Oh, right.
I've moved 12 times before the day I was born and my 18 years old. I was born in Portugal.
Right.
We moved to the Netherlands, Italy, France, Argentina, Brazil, Netherlands again, France again, then the UK, Algeria, and then my family started moving around without me. I was the youngest.
So are your family, is your father like a snake charm, a snake oil charmer? What is he? What is it like?
I like to joke. Sometimes I like to say very seriously that my father was the head of a big mafia, and every time he was getting discovered by the police, we had to move. And actually, my father is a corporate expat. He had a nice job in the financial district of Renault, which is a French car.
Okay.
The best one, if you're listening. No, I'm kidding.
Renault. Okay, Renault.
Sorry.
I'm not going to comment. I'm a Peugeot
fan. They're
really
nice. Anyway, thanks to Renault, we moved around a lot. And we, our family, where my father is from Catalonia, French side, but with origin of the Spanish side.
Isn't he Perpignan?
Yeah, next to Perpignan. Yep. He was born next to Perpignan, but if you take a few generations ago, it was Cadaqués in the Spanish side. But my grandfather himself lived actually all his life abroad, all his life. So my father, for example, was raised in Chad until he was 18. And then my grandparents moved in Madagascar, Ecuador, etc.
So you're definitely...
And on my mother's side, we're from Alsace, which is a region that has a very complicated history.
Gone between German control and French control, yeah. Yes. So your family is very familiar with migration, with immigration, with conflicting territories or disputed territories.
With a side note that we were expats. So expatriate, as you know, is kind of... the easiest way to migrate, because people consider you as the upper class, you have money, you have allocation, people help you to find a house, you're integrated right away in the high society because, you come from abroad, you're exotic.
Look, I appreciate that you recognize that, because one thing that infuriates me actually is when we talk about, let's use Cyprus as an example, Lebanese migrants, Egyptian migrants, Bulgarian migrants, but then suddenly it's British expats.
It's racism.
It is. And as somebody who, you said, you live the expat life, you're not saying that you're something different to any other migrant, but what you're admitting or accepting is that you had the privilege of being treated a certain way by your host country. And I've been lucky of that as well in places that I've lived. I guess when you're an economic... When you move for work, you have a job and you're going representing your company, or whatever, you're treated very differently to a migrant who's come to a new place looking for work or fleeing a war. And I think this is where the division between expat versus migrant versus refugee versus asylum seeker come in play. And I think it's really important that we recognize that, because I just made the mistake a couple seconds ago to say, like, you know, you had the migrant experience. You have. And you haven't. Like, you haven't lived out of a tent.
I think the only thing that could be maybe 1% closer to what a migrant would what we call migrant, but we are all migrants and expats here. Correct. I mean, if they are migrants and I'm a migrant, then if I'm an expat, then they're an expat too.
100% agree.
Because they're also coming here for a better life and a job, which was the reason my parents were moving, because they were having very nice job opportunities.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
The only difference was maybe that as I was a child, I was not taking the decision. So I was feeling it not really as a violence, but as a tragedy.
An uprooting.
Yes, it was uprooting. Indeed.
Because, as a child, you form your little friendship circles, and then when you move, you got to change
them
again.
Violent.
And it is a form of violence.
So that's the only thing that maybe I could say sometimes I understand what they could feel, but I understand only 1% of it, because it was not war.
Yeah.
It was not economical fragility that were pushing me back on the road, and it was not a road, it was a plane with a visa, with someone with a little, you know, whiteboard saying, family, Yobe, we're waiting for you. And we had hotels at the beginning. Everything was so easy. Yeah. And my parents did a great job to never really traumatize us about moving so many times. Yeah. Actually, I'm for me, this experience of uprooting really helped me to become the person I am.
Yep.
Someone that is never afraid to talk to people, to make new friends. I'm not afraid to move. I'm not really caring about the house where I live.
Well, it's helped you form empathy as well.
Because I was still in a bubble.
No, of course you're still in a bubble.
I have to every day fight my BS because I was in a very white bubble of privileged kids.
Yep. I think it sounds to me, from the little I know of you, and I'm learning more about you as we go along, you have empathy. And
trying.
But you can't say you don't, because you would not be able to have this conversation if you didn't. And I think that's important, because you're able now to use your privilege for good. Other people use their privilege for self-gain, you know, to build wealth, to create a business empire. I mean, what you're doing here in Cyprus, I mean, what is Cyprus? I mean, you've been to so many places, but you're here contributing to the bridging of the divide of our island. Now, many people, and dare I say rightfully so, many people look at Cyprus and go, you know what? Excuse my bluntness now, but screw you guys. You've had many opportunities to get yourself sorted out. People in Sudan, in South Sudan, people in Yemen, people in Israel, Palestine, Lebanon, they're dying every day right now. Why should I bother with Cyprus? Right? I think, though, what's important to note here is that people also cared about Germany yesterday, or the day before, was the anniversary of reunification of Germany. Look where Germany is today and how it's contributing to the world. You know, it's one of the leaders of the European Union. Cyprus, by, I don't want to use the word fixing Cyprus, but by taking Cyprus where it should be, could help the Middle East. It could help be a beacon of hope. It could help these Lebanese and Israelis sitting in restaurants in Larnaca be inspired to do something better in their part of the world.
It could help Syrian refugees. It could help Afghan refugees. Even so, we have a lot of mostly Cameroon, Mali refugees that are waiting for years to even just have their asylum request granted or examined.
Yeah.
And it could help Filipinas, domestic helpers that are here every day in your house, paid, sorry for that, not enough for the amount of work. They work minimum 80 hours per week for 600 euros or 400 euros.
Yeah.
They are treated like slaves. Sometimes they have good relationship with the family. But how many stories I've heard of Filipinas women, they are part of your family, but then when they get sick, you throw them away like they're a defective room.
Yeah, no, exactly.
I love Cyprus with all its complexity, and Cyprus is part of my family now because it is the island where my kids were born. So I will never be able to turn the eyes away from Cyprus.
Yep.
But because it is part of my family now,
yep,
I am getting so angry sometimes by the fact that Cypriots have been themselves living through so many hardships in their history.
Mm-hmm.
But they're lacking empathy for the people inside their own house. Yeah. I can understand you can have fear because some men are sitting in the sidewalk and looking at you while you are walking. And then you have a fear reaction because it's hard to empathy with people that look different, that are sitting, that are apparently not doing anything. But also, do we allow them to do anything? That's another question.
Yeah.
But to not have empathy with the person, the woman that is caring for your children, cleaning your kitchen, living in a small room of your house,
No, I couldn't agree with you more. I find the apathy is a, I don't know if I should use the word contagious disease, but it's certainly a disease in Cyprus. Apathy runs rampant. To play devil's advocate now, because everything you just said, I agree with. I totally agree with. But people that know me well know I play devil's advocate because I try to understand things. I want to know the roots of this apathy. What's causing this apathy? Sometimes I think it's cross-generational trauma. It's people that, you know, you're looking at a third of the island were refugees. So losing everything, their material possessions, and for many people, losing loved ones. Okay. There has never been any state mechanism for post-traumatic stress. There's never been any state mechanism for rapprochement, reconciliation, analysis, or, you know, de-victimization. So I think what's happened is that this island is it's got a lot of trauma. It's carrying that trauma, and it inflicts wounds on everything from the day-to-day of Cypriot life, from the way they treat foreigners, from the way they treat their own country, their own compatriots, from the way they treat the other communities. And you're right, it's inexcusable. It's inexcusable. But I think that we who are aware of it need to work towards acknowledging the pain of Greek Cypriots and Turkish Cypriots, what they've lived in their life, what their parents, grandparents have passed down to them, because then we have more tools in front of us to help them inflict good on the world around them.
I'm more pragmatic, sorry. Yeah. Yes, the generational carrying trauma, and this is not my place to say if it's true or not, because I'm not Cypriot.
Sure.
And I do believe that in front of trauma, this is something that you could see in many countries. The easiest way to address the fact that you look death in the eyes and that you've heard about death of loved ones and, and the fact that your house can be taken from a moment to the other is consumerism. Mm-hmm. Okay, but if we want to protect the most vulnerable people in Cyprus, and this could also include the eldest or the children, you need law. You need law that people respect. Mm-hmm. Because Cypriots, I found the Cypriots very kind. Yeah. I have very strong friendship with Cypriots, and mostly from Greek side, because I was living in Nicosia, Greek side, Cypriot Greek side. Sorry, sometimes words in French are coming, but not in English. but so I do have strong friendship from both sides, but mostly from the Cypriot Greek side. So Cypriots are able to have strong empathy between themselves. They are kind, except on the road. On the road, no. Road rage is a real issue here.
Again, people that know me well know my work in road safety.
But what they need is laws that force them to treat better their domestic helper and the people who are coming for asylum requests. Yeah. And they need laws that make sure that there is no impunity. Because there is laws, but there is impunity.
But I was about to say to you, the laws are there. And we have a lot of the, thanks to the European Union as well, the laws are there. Enforcement is the issue. Now, people in Cyprus were horrified just a couple weeks ago to hear that a man, you may have heard this, but a man who had killed his 24-year-old partner, she was pregnant at the time. This happened in 2011, okay? He had killed his 24-year-old partner who was pregnant, then, and I hate saying this, but then killed the 4-year-old child. Okay. He was captured. He was arrested. He was imprisoned for life. As far as I'm concerned, when someone is put away for life for such a, one of the worst crimes imaginable, okay, when you involve women and children, for me, I won't even say women, children in general, when you involve children, is one of the worst crimes possible. Here I'm coming to the point of enforcement. The law put him away. Enforcement, however, was not so strict. So on at least 7 occasions, he was taken out of the prison to go and visit his family, have birthday parties, go to events, and then be taken back to prison. I don't know anywhere else in the democratic world where a life-serving prisoner can go out and visit family and have a nice time. This culminated a week ago, or 2 weeks ago now, that he escaped. So he was taken to his parents' house, and in cahoots with his family and friends, he escaped. Now, how the police didn't notice him jumping out the back window, whatever, the fact of the matter is he escaped. There was a manhunt across the island. Everybody on the island expressed shock and horror. A week later, he was captured, thankfully. Again, it's what we said before we started recording about how this island has social policing. He was eventually caught because word of mouth and people recognized him, and he was caught. Great. He's put back in the prison. What horrifies me now is that chances are, in a few months' time, he's probably going to be taken out again for another visit. This person, because I don't want to call him a man, this person should be in jail for life, rehabilitate him, do whatever you're going to do, but he's behind bars for life. He cannot be given as an example to any future person who wants to commit a crime, will realize that law is one thing, enforcement is another. I'll go to jail for life. I get to come out for my family birthdays and weddings. Why not? So here we are facing the sheer and appalling lack of correct enforcement and policing and imprisonment. And that's at the top. This is under the views of the ministers and chiefs of police and you name it. I don't want to sound fatalistic now, but what chance does a civilian on the ground have when they're up against this kind of system? And you know what? We have a bloody good chance because Cypriot people are aware what's happening around them. And from time to time, they rise up. But it also helps when other people from outside come and help as well. A lot of Cypriots will say, we don't like when foreigners intervene, when foreigners come in or whatever. But you know what? Often it takes a foreigner to introduce, whether it's like in your case, this exhibition.
Oh, it was made with Cypriots.
Yeah, sure. But I mean, as in like there's this influence from outside. You know, I think that, and look, to make sense of what I'm trying to say is, maybe we don't like people coming in from outside telling Cypriots how to do things, but almost every second Cypriot has gone abroad to study. So if this is not foreign influence, then I don't know what is.
No, but you're right. It shouldn't take a foreigner to say to Cypriots what to do. I'm clearly not trying to do that also because I'm no one. I'm just a small writer. What I wanted to put a emphasis on was to have empathy to the people who are inside your home and inside your city and inside your island.
Yeah.
It's just this. Yeah. It's just see them as human. Don't see them as a broom. Yeah. Don't see them as danger. Mm-hmm. See them as human who have even more bigger difficulties and sometimes trauma than you. About the story you told, I didn't know about this feminicide. In French, we call it femicide. And infanticide, actually, also.
Yep.
It's a terrible story. I am more cautious about what prison can do to people. Mm-hmm. I'm not against having even huge murderer terrorists taken out of prison sometimes to make them feel human again and mm-hmm. to not punish the family neither. The family of the murderer didn't commit the murder.
True.
Which I agree. It's horrifying for the victim family to think you killed my grandson, I don't know what granddaughter, and you killed my daughter who was pregnant, and now you can have birthday with your family. This is very hard. But prison, especially in France, we have overpopulated prisons in France. Prisons are just turning men into beasts.
No,
in France.
I agree with
you. In Cyprus, I know that the Nicosia prison is apparently
a bit of a Shangri-La.
Yes. Well, it shouldn't be maybe go to the point of Shangri-La, but it's good that the people inside can feel human and that the family of the detained people are not getting punished.
But this is why in many countries they're called correctional facilities and not just imprisonment. Because in theory, you're meant to go in one way and come out another, a reformed person. But I kind of do insist on there are certain people, which, okay, I am 100% against capital punishment, okay? I don't agree with killing people when they've committed a certain crime. Life imprisonment, however, in my view, is a bit of a luxury because in many countries and in many periods of time, you would have been killed for what you did. So being put away for life, you're right, it does punish their families. But you know, I think it's the price we need to pay as a society if you do something as horrific as what this person did. And if, and I'm not going to say I'm the God of all knowledge and I can disagree with you or agree with my view or whatever, if you're going to let them out, then my God, you need to really do it right.
Yes.
And clearly, clearly they had not. Mm-hmm. And being in jail for 13 years and having been released at least 7 times, that's a lot.
That's a lot, actually. In France, it wouldn't happen that fast.
Yeah.
So there isn't a lot of question on this example, but I'm not against, in general, having people going out of prison and meet their loved ones. Yeah. For the loved ones also to imagine the mother also. She's not having an easy time, I guess.
Of course, yeah.
Anyway, all I'm saying is that we shouldn't start a prison debate.
We've gone down a rabbit hole.
Also, right now I'm reading a book that is amazing about how punishment can happen for crimes outside of the prison.
Do you remember the name of the book?
The author is Elsa Dac-Marceau, and she's actually talking about punitive practice in the war community, how people are applying kind of prison terms by excluding people from their community, and how it's as violent as sometimes being in prison. But I mean, okay, I don't want to summarize her book because it's like 200 pages. So interesting. And
it sounds very interesting.
So detailed.
Yeah.
And I'm going to I have the French in word, but anyway, it shouldn't be summarized. It should be read.
Tell me before we wrap up, because I obviously want people, remind me just one more time before I forget. The exhibition is located in Leedrup Street Buffer Zone. It's on to the 31st of October, 2024. It's accessible to everybody anyone that can access the buffer zone in Leedrup Street can access the exhibition. Two Turkish Cypriots, one Greek Cypriot, a French and Italian involved.
The Italian is the curator.
The curator is Italian. The name of the curator, do you remember?
Alessandro Vicentoli.
Okay. And has he spent time in Cyprus, or is this a first for him?
I don't know, actually.
Well, maybe we'll have to get a podcast with him. but tell me, just before we wrap up, I want to hear a little bit about Cyprus through your eyes as well. What was your favorite part of Cyprus, the visit, like as in sight?
Good question. I'm getting inspired for my documentary, for example, or for my book. Mm-hmm. I was always inspired inside coffee shops.
Mm.
And by coffee shops, I mean really coffee shops where I'm the youngest one by, there is 50 years of difference between me and the youngest one.
And you're also the wrong gender for most coffee shops on the island, right?
Exactly. Yeah. Often when I enter, everything stop playing, everyone stop playing backgammon, they look at me, then they realize I'm not Cypriot and they're like, okay, let's continue playing backgammon.
Yeah, she can enter.
Yes, and they often go, I hear them yell and be, you know, angry at each other, so much drama, and I can imagine the conversation. Actually, they're just fighting about backgammon.
Yeah.
So I would say my favorite place in Cyprus is Old Cafe Neo, and it can be also from the other side, but I found my favorite ones on this side in small villages. To say what is my favorite place, there is a place where you can climb in Akamas. The climber will know what I'm talking about. So this, I like it.
Rock climbing, you mean?
Yeah, rock climbing. I'm a very bad rock climbing, but my partner is a good rock climbing, and we were often going there to climb. But Nicosia, buffer zone, this moment where I was allowed with the UN to go inside the buffer zone, and we walked for 2 hours inside the buffer zone. I felt like I had a puzzle, and I could finally put the last puzzle piece. I could finish my internal map of Nicosia, and I think my favorite place is this place, because there's not even cats, because there is no one to feed them. It's just you, the land, the houses, the history. You can't even hear memories. You know the walls have memories. You can see that old papers are talking about an era, but no one is reading them anymore. I really liked this place.
Yeah, no, it's imagine how you would feel walking through Varosha.
We, well, now you can, but well, it's just the Disneyland part of it.
No, the dark tourism part of it, but no, the rest of the town, it's like you said.
I think Varosha would not feel the same that in the buffer zone of Nicosia, because I know Nicosia a bit, so I could imagine the life in Nicosia, and I felt like it was just almost a place where things can really start again quite fast.
What you said is that it's you could complete the pieces of the puzzle.
Yes.
Yeah. Yeah.
Varosha, I don't have the puzzle.
Yeah.
I have only stories of people. I never saw Varosha, you know, full of life, of human life.
Yep. No, that makes sense. That makes sense. Look, if you get the opportunity, recently I was on Sunrise Beach in Brodares, and I was standing on the shore, and I was with a friend from America, and I looked back at the buildings, and I said, okay, standing here on the waterfront, on the sand, people everywhere, sunbeds everywhere, tourists everywhere. It was absolutely heaving with tourism. And you're looking up at all the towers. And I said, this, transport yourself back 50 years. Imagine turning off the lights, click right now, and for 50 years it sits stagnant. That's Varosha. And I could see, even though he had visited Varosha, he was shocked. He's going, oh, I get it now. But in Nicosia, because you literally are walking one, two, three steps from life to comatose state, and then another couple steps to life again, you can really feel it live then and there. So, yeah, no, I appreciate that. Look, Anaïs, merci beaucoup. And I don't know how to say it in Catalan.
Well, we can send it in French. It's really good.
But thank you so much for your time. Thank you so much. I know how busy you are these days. I congratulate you on your contribution to this exhibition. Thank you for your contribution to Cypriot life as well, especially with two children of three, right?
Two children.
Okay. Two children, Cypriot born. I hope they get to have their own memories of Cyprus growing up.
I have just a small detail to say about one of my child, the oldest one, Kira. She's a girl. And she started talking to me when she was 2 years old, and I thought it was baby language. And then I realized she was talking to me in Greek.
Oh, no.
And she was getting very angry at me when I was not understanding. So I had to take extra lessons of Greek to get to her level. So she's very Cypriot. We try to maintain her Greek, but she's 4 years old now and she forgot most of it. But
oh, wow. Still,
she understands Greek.
Well, maybe you should just play some cartoons on TV that you're in Greek.
Yeah, she
maybe,
understands. Yeah. She understands the Greek cartoon that we put her. So when we don't put a lot of TV, but when we put this Greek cartoon.
I think we'll be seeing her in Cyprus in maybe 20 years' time.
Yes, for zero.
Following her mother's footsteps.
Reunification.
not in 20 years' time. We're not waiting that long.
You're right.
She'll come to visit what was once the divided island of Cyprus. Merci beaucoup. Thank you so much. All the best. And I look forward to seeing you again sometime.
Thank you so much, Costa.
The first trilingual podcast station of Cyprus. Island Talks. Open. Diverse. Free.